Hebrews chapter 12. Lord willing, in a couple of weeks, the Sunday morning lesson is going to come from the last half of this chapter. So I'm not going to focus much on the last half, mainly the first half, the first 17 verses. But would someone start us out today by reading chapter 12, verses 1 and 2? There's a tremendous amount of relevance in those verses.
Therefore, since we are a great cloud of witnesses, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Let us fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy set before him endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God.
Okay, so the first thing we're introduced to in this chapter, and remember he just finished that great chapter about faith, and all the examples of those people from Abel and Abraham and Sarah and Enoch and all of those people. So, based upon that, he says, therefore. So there's the connecting word between all of those people of faith and how their faith caused them to act and obey. He says, look at all those people. He says, you need to run the Christian race thinking about all of those great examples of faith. And whenever you're starting to slow down or it becomes difficult or you're getting tired, he said, think about those people. Think about the Abels and the Enochs and the Abrahams and the Moseses. He says, think about those people and what their faith did for them. And he says, if you do that, then you're going to be able to endure better. So you have all of these great examples of Old Testament godly people and what they were able to do. And our book had a really good point. It talked about no matter what we have to face, we can find someone in the Old Testament that successfully negotiated something similar. So if you're having a problem with this, if you're having a problem with that, if you're having a difficult time with prayer, or if you're having a difficult time with suffering, or if you're having a difficult time with money matters or whatever, there's an Old Testament example that you can go to. He says, if you do that, as you're running the Christian race, as you're thinking about all of these Old Testament examples, he says, you can think about one, and that example will help you to finish the race. Because in more than one place, the Bible says what we're engaged in is a race. And it's never a sprint, it's an endurance race. And he says, you need to run the race as if there's only one person going to win. And that needs to be you. So think about all those Old Testament examples and let them help you win the race. Help them help you, or let them help you endure. Because life can be difficult. It's been difficult since sin entered the world. I mean, God told Adam that life is going to be more difficult now since sin entered the world. So before sin entered, they tended the garden of Eden, but it wasn't difficult work. After sin, God told them that now by the sweat of your face, that's what the word in Hebrew actually means, not brow. I can get a little sweat on my brow not doing too much, but when my face is covered with sweat, I've been working hard, and that's what God told Adam. So now life is going to be more difficult, and it has been since the garden. And it's going to be difficult until the end of time. So how do we deal with it? Well, one way the author says you deal with it is you look to all the other people that's dealt with it. You look at the Abrahams and Moseses. Now, and they all made mistakes. They all sinned, every one of them. But look at what they did by not giving up, by enduring, because that's what this chapter is about, endurance, perseverance, not giving up. And it is, and he's going to mention in this chapter, it's easy to give up. It's easy to get so tired of running the Christian race that you just want to just sit down on the track and quit. But he says, just remember that great cloud of witnesses. All of them. All of those Old Testament people. And then for us, we can think about the New Testament examples too. You know, we can think about the Johns and the Peters and the Pauls and the Barnabases and the Timothys. We can think about those people too and what they did, how they endured. So that's what's supposed to help us. And that's what he's getting to in the first verse. And then he says, if that's not enough, in verse 2, when you're going around that track, look who has already finished. He says, look to the finisher, the author, the completer of our faith, who is Jesus. Look at how he endured. He says, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross. Now, we'll never have to endure what he did. So we've got this example. So we have all these Old Testament examples. And then we have Jesus, the greatest example of all. So he says, keep these examples in mind so that you won't quit. See, Jesus had to despise the shame. He had to endure all the pain and the suffering. He had to endure all of that. But think about what the Old Testament people had to endure. Think about Moses. Think about how many times Moses got angry at the people of Israel. You know, when he came down from Mount Sinai and they had built the golden calf, he was furious. But that wasn't the only time. I mean, he got so angry once that, remember, he hit the rock to get water out of it, but he wasn't supposed to. He was supposed to talk to the rock. But he was probably still angry at the people for complaining about not having water. But whatever the reason was, whether it was anger or something else, he hit the rock instead of speaking to it, and that cost him the promised land. God said, because you hit the rock and didn't speak to it, you're not going to get to enter the promised land. So Moses was able to go up on the mountain and see the promised land, but he never got to enter. So Moses had to endure an awful lot. Abraham had to endure an awful lot. So all of these people had to endure an awful lot of different types of suffering. And then Jesus, of course, is our greatest example. So the writer says, don't give up, don't collapse. And he says, one thing you need to do is you need to get rid of every weight and sin which so easily ensnares you. You know, if you're going to run an endurance race, you're not going to want to pack on a whole bunch of weights. You're going to want to get rid of everything that's not essential. Well, in particular, he's talking about sin. Because sin slows you down. Regardless of what the sin is, he says, it's going to keep you from running the race like you need to run it. So sin, and the author has a good little section in the book about sin, it is a burden. That's why he calls it a weight. It's a burden. It traps us. The Bible even talks about Satan ensnaring us. Remember in James chapter 1, he talks about when Satan tries to bait us. He baits us. He knows what we might go after, so he baits us. He tries to hook us. He tries to ensnare us. He tries to trap us. That's what sin does. And then, of course, ultimately, if we don't get rid of the sin, then it'll weigh us down where we don't finish the race. And so many people, that's happened to. They quit the race. Some sin in their life, or sins, got to be such a burden that instead of getting rid of the sin, they just quit the race. And that's what he tells us here. Don't do it. Get rid of the sin and let us run with endurance the race that's set before us. Get rid of it. Get rid of as much as you possibly can. That way you can have the chance of finishing. Yeah, sin is a great burden. Always has been. So if we're going to endure and finish the race, he says, do your best to get rid of all of those weights, those sins, those burdens, those encumbrances, because that's what they'll do. And sometimes it's not even a sin that can burden you. I mean, sometimes it can be wealth that burdens you. Or it can be other things like that. But he says, regardless of what it is, whatever is slowing you down, whatever is keeping you from running the race, he says, get rid of it, because it's not worth it. It's not worth it. Get rid of it so you can finish the race. Because ultimately, crossing the finish line is the only thing that's important. See, that's what he's stressing here. The only thing that's important is to cross the finish line. Crossing the finish line. None of those other things are important. So crossing the finish line is the ultimate goal. Just like runners, when you watch them on, you know, TV or at a track meet, the only thing that's important is crossing the finish line. It's not how you look. It's not how many people are cheering you on. The only thing that's ultimately important is, did you finish the race? Did you finish the race? So those two verses there really bring out the importance of chapter 11. Why he gave us all of those examples of all the things the people that they did. They escaped the edge of the sword. They stopped the mouths of lions. They were valiant. Some were tortured. Some were in chains and in prison. Some were stoned. See, he gave us all of those examples so that we could think of those great Old Testament examples and not quit. He's going to talk a little bit about, you know, the hands that hang down and the feeble knees. You can tell a runner when you're watching them run when they're about out of gas. You can tell when they're just about ready to drop and they probably won't make it. By their facial expressions, by their how they're holding their hands, by how they're running, you can tell. And that's what he's going to tell us here. So he said, there's some more encouragement coming in verse 3. Some more encouragement. For consider him, talking about Jesus, who endured such hostility from sinners against himself, lest you become weary and discouraged in your souls. You have not yet resisted to bloodshed, striving against sin. He says, when you think about Jesus, all the hostility and the persecution, the suffering that he had to endure from sinners, he says, you have not had to undergo what he did. I mean, he suffered physically, he suffered emotionally, he suffered spiritually. He says, and remember the writer's talking to these Hebrew Christians. He says, you have not yet resisted the bloodshed. They might have to one day, but they hadn't when the book was written. So he says, you haven't yet had to endure that level of suffering. So he said, don't become weary and discouraged. Paul told the Galatians in the last chapter in that letter not to grow weary in well-doing. Don't faint. Don't give up. Don't become discouraged. And it's easy to become discouraged, because at times it looks like the world is winning. It looks like Satan is winning. I mean, it does when you look at the world and all the evil in our society. I'll give you one little example. Just one little example of what I'm talking about. There's a particular type of razor and shaving cream that I use. Not a big deal. I ordered it online. Well, about 2 weeks ago, I said, Denise, come and look at this. Because I get emails from them, you know, about new products. And now you can order razors that are the rainbow colors, supporting the, you know, the LGBTQ group. So I said, okay, I'm done with them. That's it. Not going to do it anymore. What?
You didn't order it?
I did not. Nor will I ever order anything from them again. That's just one little thing, how the world, I mean, even something like razors. I mean, you know, who would ever have thought that? When I got it, I thought, wow. But, go ahead.
The problem is, they probably wouldn't have thought of doing it either, but because they're afraid,
oh yeah,
that community will turn on.
Right, right.
They have to.
That's right. And then,
and not that they really want to, but they have
very, very possible.
To keep that group from suing them, by, yeah, you know, all that. I think a lot of companies,
yeah,
not
they just kind of
maybe
cave into their
own it, but they have to,
yeah,
keep themselves.
Yeah.
Not saying they don't, but I just wonder sometimes if that's not.
I think that happens all over. You do.
Anymore.
You see it in all kinds of areas.
From being sued, boycotted, put up, you know, as a person against.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, look what happened to Chick-fil-A.
Oh yeah, right. That's a good example.
Well, they held their ground.
Yeah.
Yeah, they did.
But they paid for it.
Oh yeah, it cost them a lot of money.
You know,
right, right. Another example. So it's, you know, it's all over our country, and even in, like I said, even in little things like razors and shaving cream, of all things. But
well, don't worry about myself at the dollar store.
Okay. Yes, Dean.
I sure hope they don't make my post-toasties in a rainbow.
Oh. Well, Lucky Charms already is, so you're.
Cornflakes.
But, you know, it is easy to get discouraged, because it does look at times like the world and Satan and evil is winning. So the encouragement from Hebrews 12 is, you know, just think about, consider all of these examples of people and what they endured and how they endured and how they won the race, and especially think about Jesus. And how he endured and what he had to go through. And he says, hopefully that will keep you from becoming weary and discouraged and wanting to give up. Wanting to give up. So he says in verse 5, and you have forgotten the exhortation which speaks to you as to sons. So here's something else he says to think about. My son, do not despise the chastening of the Lord, nor be discouraged when you're rebuked by him. For whom the Lord loves, he chastens and scourges every son whom he receives. So he says, this goes back to the book of Proverbs, but there can be good that comes from suffering. It depends on our reaction to it. He said, look at what Jesus did. And look at what all these other people had to go through. He says, those things can make you better. So don't assume that all suffering is bad, because some of it can produce good. Let's turn over just a few pages to James chapter 1. He says in James chapter 1 verse 2, my brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. But let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. So trials and testing and suffering can produce something good. So he says, don't immediately become discouraged when these things happen. Because just remember that a father, if he's the kind of father God wants him to be, will chasten, discipline, train his children in the way they should go. And that just shows that he loves them, not that he doesn't love them. So remember, he said that this can be beneficial. People that run in marathons or run in the Olympic and so forth, they have to undergo a lot of suffering, a lot of pain, a lot of being tired to get to the point where they want to be. They don't just wake up one morning and say, you know, I think I'm going to run a marathon. Doesn't happen. So that's what he's telling us there. So he says in verse 7, if you endure chastening, God deals with you as with sons. For what son is there whom a father does not chasten? But if you are without chastening, of which all have become partakers, then you're illegitimate and not sons. So he says again, this chastening, this discipline, this suffering, this training can be a great thing. He says, if you're enduring it for the right reason, then it's as if God is chastening you. He says, with you as with sons. Because a father chastens his son. That's what a godly father does. Disciplines, trains his children in the way they should go. Furthermore, he says, verse 9, we've had human fathers who corrected us, and we paid them respect. Shall we not much more readily be in subjection to the Father of spirits and live? Well, if we showed our human father respect for the training and discipline he gave us, then surely we should do the same thing for the Heavenly Father. See, all of these things he's telling them since verse 1 is to help them not quit, not give up the race, not just sit down and say, it's over. No, to keep on going. He showed us the Old Testament examples, the example of Jesus, and how good discipline and chastening can be. It can produce something very worthwhile. He says, for they indeed, talking about our human fathers, for a few days chastened us as seemed best to them, but he for our profit, that we may be partakers of his holiness. So chastening, the kind that comes from God, can make us more holy people. He says it's for our profit. Just like people who train for races. They do that for a reason. They do that so they can finish the race. They can receive the reward. That's why they do it. That's why God sometimes chastens us as well. It's for our good, so that we can become the kind of people He wants us to become. And he says, now no chastening seems to be joyful for the present, but painful. Nevertheless, afterward, it yields the peaceable fruit of righteousness to those who have been trained by it. Those who are training for any type of race, like I mentioned before, they go through some painful experiences. Very, very painful. I have runners in my classes at school all the time, and you know they'll bring ice to class to put on a knee or an ankle or a thigh or whatever, because it's painful. Their training is painful. But he says that's not a reason to quit. So just because there's pain doesn't mean that that's not important. He says that's part of it. If you want it to yield the peaceable fruit of righteousness, then you'll endure, because you'll be a better person because of it. So some suffering can make us much better people, more holy people, more righteous people, more peaceable people, if we allow it to train us. Now, we can have just the opposite. Sometimes when people are chastened or disciplined, they end up being much worse. So it's the individual, how they respond to that discipline and chastening. It can either make them better or it can make them worse. Goes back to free will. It's not a guarantee. Just because we suffer doesn't mean we're going to be better people. It's how we allow it to shape us. You know, our attitude, our spirit toward it. Are we going to become grumpy, angry, like that? Are we going to become better people? The sun melts butter, but it hardens clay. But still the sun's exactly doing the same thing to both of them. But totally different responses. And that's the way people are today when things happen. Some become hardened, some become softened. But it's all up to the person. And it's up to us how we deal with it. We can become better runners. We it can develop in us more perseverance and patience and steadfastness, or it can make us angry and hateful and we just quit. So the same thing can happen to two people and get totally different responses. It's up to us how we respond. Well, our time is up today. So Lord willing, in 2 weeks we'll start with verse 12, another therefore statement. Notice.